Welcome to Radio BX, the podcast of the Building Energy Exchange, where we discuss sustainability and energy efficiency in the built environment. A natural extension of our core mission to foster dialogue among the entire community that impacts the performance of buildings, Radio BX is made possible through the generous support of our sponsor, National Grid. So stay engaged and join the conversation each month with some of the most compelling people in our field. On this episode of Radio BX, we are joined by In Cho. In is many things. In addition to being a registered architect and internationally accredited passive house designer, she is also a passionate educator who teaches across age ranges. In 2020, In co-founded an educational nonprofit called Passive House for Everyone, with the mission to bring passive house knowledge to youth in schools and communities by educating through the creative arts and hands-on training. This conversation with In is part of our Women in Sustainability and Energy series. WISE was founded by the Women of BX in 2015 as an inclusive platform for people of all backgrounds and gender identities to learn from experienced women leaders, share knowledge, and advance equity in the workplace. Hello, In. Welcome to Radio BX. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Good deal. My name is Katie Schwamm, and I am the Director of Educational Resources here at Building Energy Exchange, and we are so excited to have In Cho join us for our latest episode of Radio BX. Excited to dive into your career, all the work that you have, past and present, but to get us started, how about you give us a brief introduction to yourself? Take a few minutes to share some insights into your career path and how you ended up where you are today.
Okay, well, thank you for that. So I am a sustainability architect and educator in New York City, and I've been practicing architecture for over 3 decades and going into education for about at least the last 6 years plus or so. And it's just been an amazing journey to get to where I am today, which is pretty much now I'm 100% focused on sustainability, both in our architectural practice in New York City, as well as in the educational sector, where, as you know, I am involved in industry training, as well as K-12 and higher education. And I think that I'll stop right there.
Fair enough. That's a good place to stop, because I think we'll be able to pick up on various themes from your career, but understanding that education is probably going to be a key through line through your work. Maybe to take a step back, what even got you interested in studying architecture, and how did that lead you to founding your studio, Cho Shield Studio?
Yeah, that's a very loaded question, because I definitely went about it in a very circuitous manner. Nothing bad, but yeah, I mean, I am a New Yorker through and through, and I am a product, 100% product of New York City public school education. I am an immigrant from Seoul, Korea, and I came here in 1973. And in high school, I had the good fortune of attending one of the New York City public magnet high schools, Brooklyn Tech, where I was exposed to architecture, but also through a lot of hands-on activities such as foundry, wood shop, metal shop, model making, drawing, you name it. I mean, it was a dream to have that kind of exposure. And then in college, I totally ignored all of that and went into studying foreign languages. So I have a degree in French literature with a minor in Latin and Italian. And, you know, so what was interesting about that was that I thought, you know, gosh, you know, I could do foreign languages, and I was also always interested in veterinary medicine. So my goal in life was to be a veterinarian in a foreign language. And somehow that goal led me to being an architect. And so basically, going back to architecture in post-college was a very organic process. It wasn't something I planned. But once I got into it, I just fell in love with it. And I'm sure that something of my high school experience must have reverberated back and come back to me. But whatever it was, I'm so grateful for it, because it really was the right niche. And people often ask me, you know, how is a background in French, foreign languages, and veterinary medicine have anything to do with architecture. And what in hindsight I've realized is that it was an instrumental part of how I became an architect. And that is that, you know, in architecture, we are always translating ideas into designs. So my passion for translation played a really significant role in my ability to do that aspect of architecture really well. And then in terms of healing injured animals, you know, I mean, I've always loved that throughout my childhood. And now, instead of healing injured animals, I heal spaces through renovation, and as well as healing the planet for the betterment of humanity and all living creatures. So those two have really come together. And then I realized further that that's even catapulted into my education of how to translate these complex ideas of sustainability in a way in which it can be relatable to everyone. So I found that, you know, luckily the circuitous route wasn't so circuitous after all, and it actually has a direct impact on everything that I do today.
I think that's an interesting note to pick up on, because I know a lot of people out there probably think about, you know, whatever career path they assume for themselves or hope for themselves, it's not always going to follow a straight path. And even if there are projects or interests or areas that you have, they can kind of reinforce one another and, you know, set you on a path towards a career that you're interested in. So really interesting. I admit that, you know, veterinary medicine and in foreign languages, that's a curveball. I think that's the first time we've had that on the podcast. So very interesting background there. And communication, education. We already identified education, but interesting to see how your ability to convey information and make it accessible is a key element. So picking up on education, let's go ahead and dive in. Can you talk a bit more about, you know, your work in academia and work in education, because I know that you work across age ranges and across groups, K through 12, higher education. Can you speak more about what you're doing in those spaces and with your students?
So the focus is on teaching sustainable architecture, teaching, you know, vis-a-vis passive house. And I use that as a framework. You know, often people say, well, you know, there's so much more beyond passive house, you know, in terms of in sustainability in our built environment. And yes, that's true. But there has to be some sort of a framework in which we can communicate these ideas. So for me, that's how I've set it up. And of course, when I teach the topic of passive house, it's just a framework in which they learn so much more, you know, about sustainability of the environment. And, you know, we're talking about even food shortages, you know, environmental justice, social justice. So it's just a wonderful armature onto which all of these other elements of sustainability topics can kind of work together with. In terms of teaching from K through 12, I think that all of this happened, again, as an architect, when I've realize the benefits of sustainable high-performance buildings architecture and how it's so beneficial to our clients as well as to our environment, and that it really did both, and thought, well, how can we proliferate this as far and wide as possible? And we have so many amazing community industry leaders who are working so hard, tirelessly, to make a positive impact. And what can I do as an architect to help propel that and support the works of our community? And that led me to supporting policies. And so I was involved in the 2020 New York City Energy Code to help, you know, revise it, to raise the standards. And from that experience, it dawned on us that as well-intentioned as we all are to wanting to do the right thing, if we don't have the knowledge base to be able to comply, we won't be able to. And that's what truly set me into the path of education. And the first and foremost was being a trainer here at BX, which is truly what started the path of my education. So thank you so much. I'm forever eternally grateful to Building Energy Exchange for that. And then from that experience, training industry professionals, you know, realizing how effective it is, that, and with given the urgency of our climate crisis, I really thought, well, how can we even spread this knowledge even farther and wider beyond our industry? Because to truly make the impact we need at the scale that we need, it can't just be within the boundaries of our profession. Mm-hmm. That really, truly, everyone can have a set of knowledge, just the way we all understand recycling. Not that everyone does it, but still, we all have kind of a household knowledge of it. And why not sustainability in terms of the built environment, right? Yeah. So we, as you know, BX does it so well, you know, turn off the lights, or, you know, you can air seal your windows if it's too drafty. Now, these are the kind of things that you don't necessarily need to have an architect or engineer hired to tell you this. So this was kind of the genesis of getting into education at the K through 12 level, and then in higher education of architecture students as well, because of course they're the real primary core target audience who are about to enter into the industry, making a significant difference in our society for the built environment. So, but why not do it all, right? And if in terms of K through 12, if kids could learn math and English as a basic subject matter, why not sustainability, especially given our current state, yeah, right? And perhaps before, when we didn't have our climate change issues, it wasn't as critical, but now it is, and therefore we kind of have to rethink what the younger students are learning in school as basic knowledge.
Right. I do want to, again, sort of pick up on themes that I'm hearing. So leveraging frameworks, you know, you talked about using Passive House. It's this strategy, this framework for being able to communicate ideas, particularly high performance, sustainability, low carbon. Also with regards to your work in codes, how these frameworks, how these regulations can help provide structure that actually provides change. Another thing I'm hearing is going above and beyond. You know, code is one thing. Sustainability practices, we definitely need to implement those, but looking towards more high performance structures, strategies, rating systems like Passive House, let's really push the envelope to be higher performance, low carbon, and whatnot. So want to spotlight that. But also in that vein, I think your work, just as you were saying, the education of our younger generations, the folks that are coming, that are going to be emerging professionals and are really going to drive the industry, that's really impactful. Because I don't think, you know, a lot of times we think the professionals in the industry need or have that education, but why not? Why not start early and whatnot? So I want to spotlight your nonprofit, Passive House for Everyone. Can you speak a bit more about the work, the students, and everything with regards to that initiative?
Sure. And also, I just have to backtrack a little bit to highlight what you just mentioned, all the points that it, you know, the whole idea of, and this leads back to the founding of Passive House for Everyone, which is that what you mentioned is that we really have to have this multifaceted, you know, 300-degree angle perspective and approach. You know, so it's not just policy, it's education. It's not just education, it's, you know, the economy, you know, setting up the industry in the right path. So the only way in which, well, at least this is my belief, but I think that many might agree, that the way in which we can make the greatest impact is not just from one angle. We have to do it from a 360-degree angle, and everyone has to do their part, right? And when we do that, this is when real change can happen at the scale that we need for it to happen. And so it's from that perspective, that from training industry professional, that we got into training outside of the industry with that realization that you rightly pointed out in the wonderful specifics that you gave. So that's kind of what brought about Passive House for Everyone, to really formalize this the way, just empowering our youth, right, for climate action. And we do it as architects, we do it through the framework of our built environment, because we all know in this circle, right, that our built environment is a major contributor to the carbon emissions. And so as an architect, I can, you know, I wanted to figure out a way to really leverage my experience and to help others through architecture. And thus the birth of Passive House for Everyone. And we call it Passive House for Everyone. And people sometimes ask me, well, it's not really for everyone because you guys are focusing on youth. And in our mind, we see the youth as, again, another framework through which we can connect with others in sharing this knowledge, because the youth could share this knowledge once they learn it with other generations, such as their parents, their grandparents, their siblings, cousins, their peers. So again, I mean, it, we can we as individuals, you know, throughout can only do so much. So for us, we chose this framework of youth to truly get this message out as far and wide as possible. And that's what started it.
Yeah, that's really great. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, yes, engaging with the youth, there's the opportunity, there's a spread effect, there's knowledge sharing, and the concepts and information that they learn, they can share with others. The work, the profession that they might enter will take those concepts and strategies that they learn and then be able to put them into action with lasting impacts. I know, kind of going back to what you had mentioned earlier about hands-on being really formative for you and your education and whatnot, how does that inform your teaching strategy and philosophy?
It's amazing that you actually picked that up. Because that really is, as you know, the core of how we teach, right? We teach through the creative arts, and we teach it through not just the creative, but very hands-on, tactile ways. And the reason why we do this is very purposeful. We do it through what we call, and not just myself, but within the educational realm, transformative education, a way in which knowledge is not just retained as a static repository, but rather it's attained in a way that is tied with a lot of action, right? So to really make a difference, both for others as well as for oneself as you're learning it. And so the hands-on approach really has that kind of a direct one-to-one relationship that seems to, and again, I think at this point, there's been a lot of proof, personal proof of concept, that this approach has been very effective in teaching, you know, building sustainability to our youth. And especially, you know, and I teach it to all groups of students, you know, from the most underserved to the most rigorous schools, private, public, you name it, everywhere. We've been all over. And what we've found over and over again is that the hands-on approach and the creative ways in which they explore it, as you know, we do it through singing, through model making, through collage, spoken poetry, I mean, you name it, whatever the creative input is there for any child or even an adult, it's a very enjoyable way for them to learn. And using the creative arts to teach, you know, science-based topics, you know, not even myself personally, I mean, if I talk about the term energy efficiency, I have to admit, I don't find it to be the most exciting term. Is it sexy? Not really, right? Like, really, I mean, I'll admit that, even though I breathe, live, and practice energy efficiency, you know, how many people really are drawn to the idea of energy efficiency versus some other topic like ice cream? Like, yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, okay, how to make ice cream? I don't know. You know, but so therefore, I was really trying to figure out a way that it could be relatable and most meaningful and as fun for anyone to learn. Because at the end of the day, I'm not teaching this to turn everyone into architects. We just, again, want it to be just like a common household knowledge the way recycling is. And if we do that, then hopefully, you know, when you have, there's a quote from Howard Zinn, American historian, who says, small acts multiplied by millions has the power to transform the world. And if anything, that quote is what I abide by in terms of why I do what I do and why we're trying to proliferate it. Because I truly do believe that if every single individual, and not even, you know, if you talk about the global population of billions, and even 50% of the population did something a little bit, we can have serious change. And so that's, it's literally from that perspective that we've been teaching to everyone, if that makes sense. And the hands-on approach we found has proven to be very effective. People are engaged. I mean, we've tried other methods, and over again, it always comes back to the hands-on approach that people are most, especially the youth, are most engaged with in terms of learning.
Yeah, that's interesting because it kind of dovetails into a question I was going to ask with regards to how do you take technical concepts and make them accessible? And I think, you know, hearing you speak about like actionable elements and sort of meeting people where they are, using terms, using strategies like music and creative language to engage and convey, that's really great. So I think you kind of covered it, but any sort of thoughts or additional remarks with regards to demystifying technical concepts for a range of audience members.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that, you know, thank you for asking that, because actually this is a very important point. It is the crux of my educational strategies or pedagogical approach. And that is, how can we make these topics as relatable as possible to as many people as possible? And that takes on various forms. You know, we're not saying we all have different interests. And even through the creative arts, not everyone's necessarily that interested in it, but it really has a much more, it definitely has a slightly more universal angle or bent to it than, let's say, if we taught it in a non-creative way. Right, so that's something that has been, and it's also my own personal. I find it enjoyable, and again, in proof of concept, in all the different arenas that I've taught, passive house or, you know, building sustainability, it's always proven to be the most well received by students, and it really is important that point of, you know, as an educator, you truly realize, and this happens even for all of us as adults, that we can all, it's easiest and most meaningful to learn things when it's relatable to us, mm-hmm. that there's relevance to us. And I think that is the crux, the core of one of the teaching, imperatives, to how to convey a topic that has relevance to the audience in which you're teaching. And as you guys all well know, because you train, right? You know, when you train to, let's say, developers versus training to structural engineers or training to construction crews, the same topic, you have to kind of tweak it, right? Yeah. To create it, put it into a framework that's relatable to what they need to know, what they're interested in. And once that happens, then you've made that connection. And then they're able to and want to absorb the topic even more. So I think you guys know it as well as I do, that whole notion of relatability as a key to being able to teach any subject matter in a way that's effective.
It's kind of a simple thing, like know your audience, but it's helpful to remind yourself, particularly just as we were talking about these technical concepts, you know what resonates with them, know what their priorities are, so that you can make it relatable and actionable. So that's great to hear. Maybe a little bit of a pivot, but are there any projects, initiatives, things currently on your plate that you're particularly excited about?
There's so many.
busy, yeah.
There's so many. I mean, yeah, there's too many exciting things. But all right, well, let me see. From the education side, well, let me start because I have more education side. As a practicing architect, we have, you know, a couple of passive house projects that are about to start construction. So we're really super excited about that. And then just, you know, one working kind of near a flood zone and how to address that aspect. It's been very challenging and at the same time equally rewarding. Because as we all know in physics, the energy you put in is what you get back. And so therefore, we put in a lot of energy. So hopefully it'll be as rewarding. And I'm sure it will be. But that's very exciting for us. From the educational side, and it's all interrelated, but from the educational side, we've done some pretty amazing things and we're moving forward even more. So one of them is we've been involved in, along with Richard Yancey and Building Energy Exchange, and as part of the UN affiliate organization, we've been working at uniting youth all over the world through a sing-along. And so we've had a Brooklyn, one of our former Brooklyn alumni students who created a song, and we've been having youth from all over the world connecting and singing, and we actually showcased it, a beta version of it just recently in the UN affiliate Ennis Gordy Forum conference, and it was really fun. So I think we're going to scale that up even larger. Yeah, so that's going to be really fun. And we're looking for sponsors for that. So if anyone out there is interested in sponsoring, please reach out. Absolutely. Yeah. And I promise it's going to be very exciting and meaningful. But so that's super, super exciting. And I'll actually share it with you guys at one point, the song that Jahai made. His name is Jahai Makuro. His passion is in hip-hop singing. And he was one of my high school students. And he explored passive house concepts through hip-hop singing, and it was so great that we asked him if he'd write a song for movement, you know, to help unite all the youth and inspire them for climate action. So that's happening and continue to happen. What else? We just, we've been teaching through Pratt K through 12 community center to local high school students for learning about passive house sustainability, and that's been really cool. And they did a cousin version of the Pratt Ice Box Challenge, and they did an ice cream box challenge, which was excellent. Really super fun. And they also presented it at a conference at the UN affiliate organization at the Enniscorthy. So that was great. And we're going to continue teaching high school students as well.
Ice cream, making things relatable. Yeah, relatable. That.
Again, exactly. So yep. They made these structures to see which is going to keep the ice cream from melting. So that was really fun. We are also, as the undergraduate architecture sustainability coordinator for Pratt School of Architecture undergraduate, we are really looking to, it's a great community of people, really passionate about teaching sustainability. And as a role to be the sustainability coordinator, we are really looking into ramping that up even more in terms of the curriculum. They're already doing a fantastic job, and I'm only just helping to continue what they've started. So that's very exciting as well. And all of this, Building Energy Exchange has been involved with because, as you know, thank you so much, but we have the Pratt Icebox Challenge exhibition on May 14th. And again, that is helping to reinforce and really support the work of education, sustainability education in higher education. So again, this is I think a great example of how our industry and communities are coming together from different sectors and really coming together to create something that is that can really help inspire others as well to follow through. So thank you so much for joining us in this journey.
Excited about everything that you've got going on. And I do want to give a little bit of a platform because you mentioned Icebox Challenge. We have the Ice Cream Challenge and also the Icebox Challenge. So for folks who might not know, can you give us kind of a quick overview, A, of what the Icebox Challenge entails, and then what the students have been doing with regards to this latest endeavor with the Icebox Challenge and the exhibit that's coming up?
Right. So the Icebox Challenge is the kind of the passive house industry scientific demonstration that showcases how the benefits of high performance buildings by creating two structures, one to local construction standards and then the other to the passive house high performance standards of construction. And then they fill it with a huge block of ice, over a ton typically, and then it sits out in the public space for, a period of time. It could be a month, 2 months, depending on climate and season. It originated in Brussels, and we all know that BX also had an instrumental part in bringing that in 2018 to New York City. So that was the first in New York City to undergo that wonderful project and exhibition, and that was super exciting to be part of as well. And from that experience, as an educator at Pratt, undergraduate architecture, I thought, why not bring it to the students, right? And so again, the hands-on approach to learning, they thought as a design build. So this was actually the first ever U.S. student-led, because prior it was always within the professional industry. But this was the first ever U.S. student-led Icebox Challenge. So the students in one semester, it was quite daunting, I have to admit. In one semester, they learned the passive house concepts, and then they designed, various structures. They finalized into one, and they also built it. And this is full scale. So it ended up being about roughly within a 9-foot by 9-foot by 9-foot framework. And they built two of them, right? And then they also displayed it publicly at the end of their semester. And again, to that idea of transformative education, that it's that when they're learning these things, it's not just learning, but they're also giving back to the community as part of their learning process. So after they've designed the structures and we put in 1,144 pounds of ice in each structure, while it was sitting for a week plus, we had the students got to teach other community schools. So public schools, yeah. So they had elementary schools, junior high school students who came on a field trip and got to see the structures, and our Pratt fourth year architecture students got to teach their younger counterparts about passive house.
That's amazing. That going back to knowledge sharing, you know, every time that you're empowering students or anybody, they have the opportunity to then multiply that information with folks that they share it with. That's amazing. And I also just like the concept too of why not students? You'd said icebox challenge. It had been previously like only in the professional field. Why not students?
Right.
So that's great.
Yeah, and since the Pratt Icebox Challenge, and we wanted to, they also built it modularly as a way to potentially for other institutions to use the structures, but it's already started a wave of other schools. I think the next one happened in India, is happening in India, New Delhi, as well as, I forget, Sebastian Serrano from A2M Architects, who started this whole project out of Brussels, is also working with another student group in another country for that country's Icebox Challenge, student-led. So it's definitely already having repercussions, ripple effect on other schools in other countries.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, excited to see the student work when it's on display here at Building Energy Exchange starting in May and lasting through the fall. And also excited to see, as you say, these ripple effects, other students, other universities, schools tackling this initiative as well. So I want to pick up, you know, the concept of empowering the future. You've done a lot of work with students and whatnot. Can you share a story when you might have felt particularly empowered by a student's work or your work with emerging professionals and students?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, there's so many. I mean, every single student I've worked with, I mean, they all have something amazing and special. Like, for example, I mentioned Jahai Mukuro, who went to, he's an alumnus from Boys and Girls High School in Bed-Stuy. And when he was a junior, or rather senior, I think, he learned about Passive House, the five principles, and his first exploration was on air sealing, principle number one of Passive House. And he turned it into a rap song. And now he's gone to, he's created three more songs for us, including the Youth United for Climate Action. So that's just so, for me, that's everything. The fact that, you know, he's continuing to pursue his passion in being a hip-hop singer, and but he's also continuing to really help other fellow youth by creating this song for others to share. So that's super, super inspiring for me, and feeling that he's really having a sense of agency to his craft. And he even said, because we had an interview with him, he said, yeah, I never thought that I could do something like this. Mm-hmm. You know, just so direct, you know. And he said, you know, I sing about things that are very personal to me, but this is the first time in my life that I'm singing and creating songs of a topic that goes beyond just me and really helping, you know, my fellow peers. And so, I mean, of course, I was almost in tears, just, you know, feeling so touched by it. But it's all him. And the thing that what I find the most inspiring in teaching is when I see the internal power of our youth. I mean, truly, they're so bright, they're so brilliant, they're so creative. And it's when you see that all it takes is for them to have the chance, the opportunity to tap into their inherent abilities that are just tremendous. And when you see it realized and manifest in one of their creative outputs, you know, learning about sustainability, you realize that, oh my goodness, like these youth and just humanity in general, we've got so much potential, and we just have to just kind of like channel it. And once that's channeled in the right location, the place, anything can happen. We can solve everything. And that is inspiring for me.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting and important message for us in the industry, the professionals out there, creating these opportunities for youth, for emerging professionals, for transitioning professionals to be able to engage and grow and pursue their interests. So something for, again, us as professionals in the industry to think about. On the flip side, for students or young professionals or folks that are interested in learning more or getting into this industry, do you have any advice or thoughts for them?
If you have any inkling of interest to enter into the profession, dive in. Just plunge. Don't worry about your fears or doubts or anything. Just do it, you know? And, you know, as an educator, this is, and even for myself, and we all know making mistakes is never, never pleasant, but it's such the most critical part of growth. Is we have to, you know, like I always use the example, the analogy of a toddler, you know, when they're just about to learn how to walk, right? And when they're learning, you know, you see them fall all the time. We never judge them thinking that there's something wrong. We know that this is a natural, you know, way to learn how to walk. And eventually they do. But it's not like they one day say, I'm going to walk, and they know how to walk right away, right? So as we grow up, you know, somehow in terms of our educational process, you know, somehow making mistakes is considered so bad or failing. And so the whole idea, that word has such a negative connotation when it shouldn't. You know, to be able to grow and to be able to get better at something, we have to make mistakes. This is the natural progression, right? And so to be, really be able to embrace it and ultimately not be afraid of it. Or even if you're afraid to do it, still do it. And so that's kind of what I would say to everybody. And I apply this to myself all the time. I'm afraid a lot of the times. I'm afraid of what I'm doing, if I'm doing anything right, correctly, or anything. And I make a lot of mistakes, but I'm hard on myself. I'll go at the end of the day and I'll be totally dejected and feeling horrible. And then, you know, and then hopefully my husband will, you know, console me. And then it'll take me about 24 to 36 hours to feel better. And then I jump back up again. But I think that's the most important thing. It's not the fact that we've made the mistake or we failed. You know, it's okay, you know, but at the end of the day, jump back up.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. Dive in and jump back up. Give yourself a little grace to make mistakes and grow. That's really excellent. Looking ahead, do you see any emerging trends or developments in high performance design or academia that really excite you?
Yes, thank you for asking that question. I see it everywhere. I'm excited by where all the academia is going. I mean, you know, it always starts out with just the thinking process, or just even worse to say, we want to teach sustainability in our schools, okay? And sometimes at the moment, sometimes it could be a little bit of a greenwashing, or, you know, we say it, but we don't always take action through it. But we still, the fact that everyone is starting to join this idea is, to me, already exciting. I mean, first you have to acknowledge that you want to do it. And then it takes, of course, you know, institutions, it's a huge, huge, big infrastructure, and it doesn't happen overnight. But I hear this conversation over and over and over again everywhere I turn, in every single institution, in every single borough, every single state, every single country. So I'm excited by that, you know. And so therefore, the more, you know, we have examples to inspire other institutions, the more the changes will happen gradually, or hopefully a little bit faster. But yeah, so I'm really excited. I think that we're all going in the right direction. And I think that there's a lot more positivity that's happening than negativity, if I can say that in a very broad term. I see it everywhere. And maybe I'm in a little bubble, I don't know, but I hear it, and so I'm very excited.
That's great. And I think, you know, to your point, the more successes, the more examples you'll be able to point to, and just as, you know, there's no one size fits all, as we have different varieties and flavors, there will be opportunities for that to grow. Yeah.
Yeah. And just to add, you know, I see it in our youth. I mean, all the students that I've encountered, they're so passionate about sustainability. They want to do something. Again, they just need to have the knowledge to do it and the guidance. And so that's what we're here for, right? To have their back, give them the support that they need and the knowledge. And once they have that, they will thrive. And so seeing that from the student side, who are asking for it, is also exciting. And I think between the two sides, from the students as well as from, you know, top down, bottom up, and everywhere in the middle, that everyone is interested in these topics. So that's very encouraging.
Any final words or thoughts?
Final words or thoughts? Well, I'd say in general that just keep going. You know, I'm so appreciative of our industry in general. You know, there's so many amazing folks and communities doing really good, important work, and just keep going. Sometimes it feels a bit siloed. You know, you're in your corner doing your thing. And when that happens, and this is why sometimes conferences are so important, because it's a moment when everyone comes together and share what they've been doing, and it really helps to kind of nurture us and re-energize us for the next, you know, for the next wave of work that we do. But I'd say thank you so much for everyone, for you guys, for doing what you do, and for everyone else in the world and locally, nationally, and internationally, and for our students. And just, again, you know, just keep going. That's all I have to say. And truly, again, that quote from Howard Zinn, small acts multiplied by millions has the power to transform the world. And so if we can all just do a little, that's enough.
Amazing. I think that's a great place to end. And thank you so much for your time, for your work, for everything that you do. And it's been a great conversation. Yeah.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.